The Malazan banner snapped in the wind, the spars creaking above the smoke-stained turret. But here in the shelter of the wall, the air was calm. On the western horizon across from her rose the Maranth Mountains, reaching a mangled arm northward to Janabiris. As the range swept southward, it joined the Talin in a jagged line stretching 1,000 leagues into the east. Off to her right lay the flat, yellow-grassed Rivi plain. Taishren leaned on a merlin looking down on the wagons rolling into the city. From below rose the groans of oxen and shouting soldiers. The High Mage hadn't moved or said a word in some minutes. Off to his left waited a small wood table, its surface scarred and pitted and crowded with runes cut deep into the oak. Peculiar dark stains blotted the surface here and there. Knots of tension throbbed in Tattersail's shoulders. Meeting Belladan had shaken her, and she didn't feel up to what was to come. "Bridge burners," the High Mage muttered. Startled, the sorceress frowned, then stepped up to stand beside Taishren. Descending from a hill off to the right, a hill she knew intimately, rode a party of soldiers. Even from this distance, she recognized 4 of them. Quick Ben, Kalam, Whiskey Jack, and that recruit, Sorry. The 5th rider was a short, wiry man who had Sapper written all over him.
"Oh?"
she said, feigning lack of interest.
"Whiskey Jack's squad," Taishren said.
He turned his full gaze on the sorceress.
"The same squad you spoke with immediately following the moon's retreat."
The High Mage smiled, then clapped Tattersail's shoulder.
"Come, I require a reading. Let's begin."
He walked over to stand before the table.
"Upon strands are twisting a peculiar maze. The influence snares me again and again."
He turned his back to the wall and sat down on a crenel, then looked up.
"Tattersail," he said soberly, "in matters of empire, I am the servant of the Empress."
Tattersail recalled their argument, the debriefing. Nothing had been resolved.
"Perhaps I should take my complaints to her then."
Taishren's brows rose.
"I take that as sarcastic."
"You do?"
the High Mage said, stiffly.
"I do. And be thankful for it, woman."
Tattersail pulled out her deck and held it against her stomach, running her fingers over the top card. Cool, a feeling of great weight and darkness. She set the deck in the table's center, then lowered her bulk slowly into a kneeling position. Her gaze locked with Taishren's.
"Shall we begin? Tell me of the spinning coin."
Tattersail's breath caught. She could not move.
"First card,"
Taishren commanded. With an effort, she expelled the air from her lungs in a hissing sigh.
"Damn him,"
she thought. An echo of laughter sounded in her head, and she realized that someone, something, had opened the way. An ascendant was reaching through her, its presence cool and amused, almost fickle. Her eyes shut of their own accord, and she reached for the first card. She flipped it almost haphazardly to her right. Eyes still closed, she felt herself smile.
"An unaligned card. Orb. Judgment and true sight."
The second card she tossed to the left side of the field.
"Virgin. High House Death. Here, scarred and blindfolded, with blood on her hands."
Faintly, as if from a great distance away, came the sound of horses, thundering closer, now beneath her, as if the earth had swallowed them. Then the sound rose anew, behind her. She felt herself nod.
"The recruit. The blood on her hands is not her own, the crime not its own. The cloth against her eyes is wet."
She slapped the third card immediately in front of her. Behind her lids, an image formed. It left her cold and frightened.
"Assassin, High House shadow. The rope, a count of knots unending. The patron of assassins is in this game. For a moment she thought she heard the howling of hounds. She laid a hand on the fourth card and felt a thrill of recognition ripple through her, followed by something like false modesty. O pawn, lady's head high, lord's low. She picked it up and set it down opposite Tatian. There's your block, she thought. She smiled to herself. Chew on it a while, high mage. The lady regards you with disgust. Tattersail knew he must be burning with questions, but he wouldn't speak them. There was too much power behind this opening. Had he sensed the Ascendant's presence? She wondered if it scared him. The coin, she heard herself say, spins on, High Mage. Its face looks upon many, a handful perhaps, and here is their card. She set the fifth card to Opon's right, edges touching. Another unaligned card, crown, wisdom and justice, as it is upright. Around it, a fair city's walls, lit by flames of gas, blue and green. She pondered. Yes, Darujistan, the last free city. The way closed, the Ascendant withdrawing as if bored. Tattersail's eyes opened, an unexpected warmth comforting her weary body. Into Opon's maze, she said, amused at the truth hidden in that statement. I can take it no further, High Mage. Tatian's breath gusted out and he leaned back. You've gone far past what I've managed, sorceress. His face was drawn as he looked at her. I'm impressed with your source, though not pleased with its message. He frowned, planting his elbows on his knees and steepling his long-fingered hands before his face. This spinning coin ever echoing. There's the jester's humor in this shaping. Even now I feel we are being misled. Death's virgin, a likely deceit. It was now Tattersail's turn to be impressed. The High Mage was an adept, then. Had he, too, heard the laughter punctuating the laying of the field? She hoped not. You might be right, she said. The Virgin's face is ever-changing. It could be anyone. Can't say the same for Opon, or the ropes. She nodded. A very possible deception, she said, pleased to be conversing with an equal. A truth that made her grimace inwardly. It's always better when hatred and outrage stay pure, uncompromised, she thought. I would hear your thoughts, Tatian said. Tattersail started, shied from the High Mage's steady gaze. She began collecting the cards. Would it hurt to offer some explanation? If anything, it will leave him even more rattled than he already is, she thought. Deception is the patron assassin's forte. I sense nothing of his presumed master, Shadow Throne himself. Makes me suspect the rope is on his own ear. Beware the assassin, High Mage. If anything, his games are even more subtle than Shadow Throne's. And while Opon plays their own version, it remains the same game. And that game is being played out in our world. The Twins of Luck have no control in Shadow's realm, and Shadow is a warren known for slipping its boundaries, for breaking the rules. True enough, Tatian said, rising to his feet with a grunt. The birth of that bastard realm has ever troubled me. It's young yet, Tattersail said. She picked up her deck and returned it to the pocket inside her cloak. Its final shaping is still centuries away, and it may never happen. Recall other new houses that ended up dying a quick death. This one stinks of too much power. Tatian returned to his study of the Maranth Mountains. My gratitude, he said,
as Tattersall went to the steps leading down into the city.
"Is worth something, I hope. In any case, sorceress, you have it."
Tattersall hesitated at the landing, then began the descent. He'd be less magnanimous if he found out that she had just misled him. She could guess the Virgin's identity. Her thoughts travelled back to the moment of the Virgin's appearance. The horses she had heard passing beneath hadn't been an illusion. Whiskey Jack's squad had just entered the city through the gate below, and among them rode Sorry. Coincidence? Maybe, but she didn't think so. The spinning coin had faintly wobbled at that instant, then its ringing returned. Though she heard it in her mind day and night, it had become almost second nature, and Tattersall found she had to concentrate to find it. But she'd caught the nudge, felt the pitch change, and sensed a brief instant of uncertainty. Death's Virgin, and the assassin of High House Shadow. There was a connection there somehow, and it bothered upon. Obviously, everything remained in a flux. "Terrific," she muttered, as she reached the bottom of the staircase. She saw the young Marine who had approached her earlier. He stood in a line of recruits in the center of the compound. No commanding officer was in sight. Tattersall called the boy over.
"Yes, sorceress?"
he asked, as he arrived to stand at attention in front of her.
"What are you all standing around for, soldier?"
"We're about to be issued our weapons. The staff sergeant's gone to bring the wagon round."
Tattersall nodded. "I have a task for you. I'll see that you get your weapons, but not the tinny ones your friends are about to receive. If a superior officer questions your absence, refer him to me."
"Yes, sorceress."
A pang of regret hit Tattersall upon meeting the boy's bright, eager gaze. Chances were, he'd be dead within a few months. The Empire had many crimes staining its banner, but this was the worst of them. She sighed.
"Deliver, in person, this message to Sergeant Whiskey Jack, Bridgeburners. The fat lady with the spells wants to talk." "You have it, soldier?"
The boy blanched.
"Let's hear it."
The Marine repeated the message in a deadpan tone. Tattersall smiled.
"Very good. Now run along, and don't forget to get an answer from him. I'll be in my quarters."
Captain Parron swung around for a last look at the Black Maranth. The squad had just reached the plateau's crest. He watched until they disappeared from view, then shifted his gaze back to the city in the east. From this distance, with the wide flat plain in between, Pale seemed peaceful enough, although the ground outside the walls was studded with black basaltic rubble and the memory of smoke and fire clung to the air. Along the wall, scaffolding rose in places, tiny figures crowding the frameworks. They appeared to be rebuilding huge gaps in the stonework. From the north gate, a sluggish stream of wagons wound out toward the hills, the air above them filled with crows. Along the edge of those hills ran a line of mounds too regular to be natural. He had heard the rumors here and there. 5 dead mages, 2 of them high mages. The second's losses enough to fire speculation that it would be merged with the 5th and the 6th to form a new regiment. And Moonspawn had retreated south, across the Tarlin Mountains to Lake Azure, trailing smoke, drifting and leaning to one side like a spent thunderhead. But one tale reached into the captain's thoughts deeper than all the rest. The Bridgeburners were gone. Some stories said killed to a man, others insisted that a few squads had made it out of the tunnels before the collapse. Parron was frustrated. He'd been among Maranth for days. The uncanny warriors hardly ever spoke, and when they did, it was to each other in that incomprehensible tongue of theirs. All of his information was out of date, and that put him in an unfamiliar position. Mind you, he thought, since Genobaris, it had been one unfamiliar situation after another. So here he was, on the waiting end of things once again.
He readjusted his duffel bag and was preparing for a long wait when he saw a horseman top the far plateau's crest. The man had an extra mount with him, and he rode straight for the captain. He sighed. Dealing with the claw always grated. They were so damn smug. With the exception of that man in Genobiris, none seemed to like him much. It had been a long time since he'd known someone he could call a friend. Over 2 years, in fact. The rider arrived. Seeing him up close, Perrin took an involuntary step back. Half the man's face had been burned away. A patch covered the right eye, and the man held his head at an odd angle. The man flashed a ghastly grin, then dismounted.
"You the one, huh?"
he asked in a rasping voice. "Is it true about the bridge burners?" Perrin demanded. "Wiped out?"
"More or less. 5 squads left or thereabouts, about 40 in all."
His left eye squinted and he reached up to adjust his battered helmet.
"Didn't know where you'd be heading before. Do now. You're Whiskey Jack's new captain, huh?"
"Sergeant Whiskey Jack is known to you?" Perrin scowled. This claw wasn't like the others. Whatever thinking they did about him, they kept to themselves, and he preferred it that way. The man climbed back into his saddle.
"Let's ride. We can talk on the way."
Perrin went to the other horse and tied his bag to the saddle, which was of the Seven Cities style, high-backed and with a hinged horn that folded forward. He'd seen several like this on this continent. It was a detail he had already filed away. Natives from the Seven Cities had a predisposition for making trouble, and this whole Jennabacan campaign had been a foul-up from the very start. No coincidence, that, he thought. Most of the 2nd, 5th, and 6th armies had been recruited from the Seven Cities subcontinent. He mounted, and they settled into a steady canter across the plateau. The claw talked.
"Sergeant Whiskey Jack's got a lot of followers around here. Acts like he don't know it. You've got to remember something that's been damn near forgotten back in Malaz. Whiskey Jack once commanded his own company."
Perrin's head snapped around. That fact had been thoroughly stripped from the annals. As far as Empire history was concerned, it had never happened.
"Back in the days when Dasim Ultor ran the military,"
the claw continued blithely,
"it was Whiskey Jack's 7th Company that ran down the Seven Cities Marge Cabal out in the Panputs and Wastes. He ended the war then and there. Of course, everything went bad after that, what with Hood taking Ultor's daughter. And not long after that, when Ultor died, all his men were pulled down fast. That's when the bureaucrats swallowed up the army. Damn jackals. And they've been sniping each other ever since, at a Hood's gate with the campaigns."
The claw sat forward, pushing the saddle horn down, and spat past his horse's left ear. Perrin shivered, seeing that gesture. In the old days, it had announced the beginning of tribal war among the Seven Cities. Now it had become the symbol of the Malar's 2nd Army. "Are you suggesting," he cut in, "that the story you've just told me is commonplace?"
"Not in detail," the claw admitted. "But some old veterans in the 2nd fought with Ultor, not just in 7 Cities, but as far back as Farlar."
Perrin thought for a time. The man riding beside him, though a claw, was also 2nd Army. And he'd been through a lot with them. It made for an interesting perspective. He glanced at the man and saw him grinning.
"What's so funny?"
The man shrugged.
"The bridge burners are a little hot these days. They're getting chaff for recruits, and that makes it look like they're about to be disbanded. You talk with whoever it is you talk with back in Malaz, you tell them they'd end up with a mutiny on their hands. They start messing with the bridge burners. That's in every report I send, but no one seems to listen to me."
His grin broadened.
"Maybe they think I've been turned or something, eh?"
Perrin shrugged. "You were called in to meet me, weren't you?" The claw laughed.
"You've really been out of touch, haven't you? They called me in because I'm the last active in the 2nd. And as for the 5th and 6th, forget it. Broods Tister Andy could pick out a claw from 1,000 paces. None of them left either. My own claw master was garrotted 2 days back. That's something else, ain't it? You, I inherited, Captain. Once we hit the city, I send you on your way, and that's probably the last we'll ever see of each other. You deliver your mission details as captain of the 9th Squad. They either laugh in your face, or they stick a knife in your eye. It's even betting what they'll do. Too bad, but there it is.
Up ahead loomed the gates of Pale.
One more thing, the claw said, his eyes on the Merlins above the gate. Just a bone I'll throw you, in case I pawn smiling on you. The High Mage Tastron's running things here. Dujek's not happy, especially considering what happened with Moonspawn. It's a bad situation between them, but the High Mage is relying on his being in close and constant communication with the Empress, and that's what's keeping him on top. A warning, then. Dujek's soldiers will follow him. Anywhere. And that goes for the 5th and 6th armies, too. What's been gathered here is a storm waiting to break.
Perrin stared at the man. Topper had explained the situation, but Perrin had dismissed the man's assessment. It had seemed too much like a scenario devised to justify the Empress filling the gallows. Not a tangle I want to get involved in, he thought. Leave me to complete my single task. I desire no more than that. As they passed into the gate's shadow, the claw spoke again.
By the by, Tastron just watched us arrive. Any chance he knows you, Captain?
No. I hope not, he added silently. As they trotted into the city proper, and a wall of sound rose to meet them, Perrin's eyes glazed slightly. Pale was a madhouse, buildings on all sides gutted by fire. The streets, despite being cobble-heaved in places and dented in others, were packed with people, carts, braying animals and marines. He wondered if he should start measuring his life in minutes. Taking command of a squad that had gone through 4 captains in 3 years, then delivering a mission that no sane soldier would consider, coupled with a brewing firestorm of a large-scale insurrection, possibly headed by the Empire's finest military commander, against a high mage who looked to be carving his own rather big niche in the world? All of this had Perrin feeling somewhat dismayed. He was jolted by a heavy slap on his back. The claw had moved his horse close, and now he leaned over.
Out of your depth, Captain. Don't worry. Every damn person here is out of their depth. Some know it, some don't. It's the ones who don't you got to worry about. Start with what's right in front of you, and forget the rest for now. It'll show up in its own time. Find any marine and ask direction to the bridge burners. That's the easy part.
Perrin nodded. The claw hesitated, then leaned closer.
I've been thinking, Captain. It's a hunch, mind you. But I think you're here to do some good. Now, don't bother answering. Only, if you get into trouble, you get word to Tok the Younger. That's me. I'm in the messenger corps, Outrider Class the 2nd. All right.
Perrin nodded again.
Thank you, he said,
just as a loud crash sounded behind them, followed by a chorus of angry voices. Neither rider turned.
What's that you said, Captain?
Perrin smiled. Better head off. Keep your cover, in case something happens to me. I'll find myself a guide, by the book.
Sure thing, Captain.
Tok the Younger waved, then swung his mount down a side street. Moments later, Perrin lost sight of him. He drew a deep breath, then cast his gaze about, searching for a likely soldier. Perrin knew that his early years in the noble courts of his homeland had prepared him well for the kind of deception Adjunct Lorne demanded of him. In the past 2 years, however, he had begun to recognize more clearly what he was becoming. That brash, honest youth who had spoken with the Empress's adjunct that day on the Itgokani's coast now gnawed at him. He had dropped right into Lorne's lap like a lump of unshaped clay, and she had proceeded to do what she did best. What frightened Perrin most these days was that he had grown used to being used. He'd been someone else so many times that he saw a 1,000 faces,
heard a thousand voices, all at war with his own. When he thought of himself, of that young noble-born man with the overblown faith in honest and integrity, the vision that came to him now was of something cold, hard, and dark. It hid in the deepest shadows of his mind, and it watched. No contemplation, no judgment, just icy, clinical observation. He didn't think that that young man would see the light of day again. He would just shrink further back, swallowed by darkness, then disappear, leaving no trace. And Perrin wondered if he even cared anymore. He marched into the barracks that had once housed Pale's noble guard. One old veteran lounged on a nearby cot, her rag-wrapped feet jutting over the end. The mattress had been stripped away and tossed into a corner. The woman lay on the flat boards, her hands behind her head. Perrin's gaze held on her briefly, then travelled down the ward. With the lone exception of the veteran marine, the place was empty. He returned his attention to her.
"Corporal, is it?"
The woman didn't move.
"Yeah? What?"
"I take it," he said dryly, "that the chain of command has thoroughly disintegrated around here." Her eyes opened and managed a lazy sweep of the officer standing before her.
"Probably," she said, then closed her eyes again. "You looking for somebody or what?"
"I'm looking for the 9th Squad, Corporal."
"Why? They in trouble again?"
Perrin smiled to himself. "Are you the average bridge burner, Corporal?"
"All the average ones are dead," she said.
"Who's your commander?" Perrin asked.
"Antsy, but he's not here."
"I can see that." The captain waited, then sighed. "Well, where is this Antsy?"
"Try Nobbs Inn up the street. The last I seen of him, he was losing his shirt to Hedge. Antsy's a card player, right? Only not a good one."
She began picking at a tooth at the back of her mouth. Perrin's brows rose. "Your commander gambles with his men?"
"Antsy's a sergeant," the woman explained. "Our captain's dead. Anyway, Hedge is not in our squad."
"Ah, and what squad is he with?" The woman grinned, swallowing whatever her finger had dislodged.
"The 9th.
"What's your name, Corporal?"
"Picker. What's yours?"
"Captain Perrin." Picker shot up into a sitting position, her eyes wide.
"Oh, you're the new captain who's yet to pull a sword, eh?"
Perrin smiled. "That's right."
"You got any idea of the odds on you right now? It doesn't look good."
"What do you mean?" She smiled a broad smile.
"The way I pick it," she said, leaning back down and closing her eyes again, "the first blood you see on your hands is going to be your own, Captain Perrin. Go back to Quantali where it's safe. Go on. The Empress needs her feet licked."
"They're clean enough," Perrin said. He was not sure how to deal with this situation. Part of him wanted to draw his sword and cut Picker in half. Another wanted to laugh, and that one had an edge of hysteria to it. Behind him, the outer door banged open, and heavy footsteps sounded on the floorboards. Perrin turned. A red-faced sergeant, his face dominated by an enormous handlebar moustache, stormed into the room. Ignoring Perrin, he strode up beside Picker's cot and glowered down at her.
"Damn it, Picker, you told me Hedge was having a bad run, and now that bow-legged turd's cleaned me out." "Hedge is having a bad run," Picker said, "but yours is worse. You never asked me about that, did you? Antsy, meet Captain Perrin, the 9th new officer."
The sergeant swung around and stared.
"Hood's breath," he muttered, then faced Picker again.
"I'm looking for Whiskey Jack, Sergeant," Perrin said softly. Something in the captain's tone brought Antsy around. He opened his mouth, then shut it when his eyes caught Perrin's steady gaze.
"Some kid delivered a message. Whiskey Jack trooped out. A few of his people are at Nobbs."
"Thank you, Sergeant." Perrin walked stiffly from the room. Ansi let out a long breath and glanced at Pika.
2 days, she pronounced. Then somebody does him. Old Rockface has already laid 20 to that.
Ansi's expression tightened.
Something tells me that'd be a damn shame.
Paran entered Nobsian and stopped just inside the doorway. The place was packed with soldiers, their voices a jumbled roar. Only a few showed on their uniforms the flame emblem of the bridge burners. The rest were Second Army. At a large table beneath an overhanging walkway that fronted rooms on the first floor, half a dozen bridge burners sat playing cards. A wide-shouldered man whose black hair was braided into a ponytail and knotted with charms and fetishes sat with his back to the room, dealing out the cards with infinite patience. Even through the high-tide roar, Paran could hear the man's monotone counting. The others at the table deluged the dealer with curses, to little effect.
Bargast, Paran murmured, his gaze on the dealer. Only one in the bridge burners. That's the ninth, then.
He took a deep breath, then plunged into the crowd. By the time he arrived behind the Bargast, his fine cloak was drenched with sour ale and bitter wine, and sweat cast a shine on his forehead. The Bargast, he saw, had just finished the deal and was setting down the deck in the table's center, revealing as he did so the endless blue woad tattooing on his bared arm, the spiral patterns marred here and there by white scars.
"Is this the ninth?"
Paran asked loudly. The man opposite the Bargast glanced up, his weathered face the same color as his leather cap, then returned his attention to his cards.
"You Captain Paran?"
"I am. And you, soldier?"
"Edge."
He nodded at the heavy man seated to his right.
"That's Mallet, the squad's healer, and the Bargast name is Trotz. And it ain't because he likes jogging."
He jerked his head to his left.
"The rest don't matter. They're Second Army and lousy players to boot. Take a seat, Captain. Whiskey Jack and the rest, being called out for the time being, should be back soon."
Paran found an empty chair and pulled it up between Mallet and Trotz. Hedge growled.
"Hey, Trotz, you gonna call this game or what?"
Releasing a long breath, Paran turned to Mallet. "Tell me, healer, what's the average life expectancy for an officer in the bridge burners?" A grunt escaped Hedge's lips.
"Before or after Moonspawn?"
Mallet's heavy brows rose slightly as he answered the captain.
"Maybe 2 campaigns. Depends on a lot of things. Balls ain't enough, but it helps. And that means forgetting everything you learned and jumping into your sergeant's lap like a babe. You listen to him, you might make it."
Hedge thumped the table.
"Wake up, Trotz! What are we playing here?"
The Bargast scowled.
"I'm thinking," he rumbled.
Paran leaned back and unhitched his belt. Trotz decided on a game, to the groans of Hedge, Mallet, and the 3 Second Army soldiers, since it was the game Trotz always decided on. Mallet spoke.
"Captain, you've been hearing things about the bridge burners, right?"
Paran nodded. "Most officers are terrified of the bridge burners. Word is, the mortality rate's so high because half the captains end up with a dagger in their back." He paused and was about to continue when he noticed the sudden silence. The game had stopped, and all eyes had fixed on him. Sweat broke out under Paran's clothing.
"And from what I've seen so far," he pressed on, "I'm likely to believe that rumor. But I'll tell you something, all of you. If I die with a knife in my back, it had better be because I earned it. Otherwise, I will be severely disappointed."
He hitched his belt and rose.
"Tell the sergeant I'll be in the barracks. I'd like to speak with him before we're officially mustered."
Hedge gave a slow nod.
"Will do, Captain."
The man hesitated.
Captain, care to sit in on the game?"
Paran shook his head.
"Thanks, no."
A grin tugged the corner of his mouth. Bad practice, an officer taking his enlisted men's money.
Now, there's a challenge you'd better back up sometime, Hedge said, his eyes brightening.
I'll think about it, Parron replied as he left the table. Pushing through the crowd, he felt a growing sense of something that caught him completely off guard. Insignificance. A lot of arrogance had been drilled into him, from his days as a boy among the nobility, through to his time at the academy. That arrogance now cowered in some corner of his brain, shocked, silent, and numb. He had known that well before he had met the adjunct. His path into and through the officer training corps of the Marine Academy had been an easy procession marked by winks and nods. But the Empire's wars were fought here, thousands of leagues away, and here, Parron realized, nobody cared one whit about court influences and mutually favorable deals. Those shortcuts swelled his chances of dying, and dying fast. If not for the adjunct, he'd have been totally unprepared to take command. Parron grimaced as he pushed open the tavern door and stepped out into the street. It was no wonder the old emperor's armies had so easily devoured the feudal kingdoms in his path on the road to empire. He was suddenly glad of the stains marring his uniform. He no longer looked out of place. He strode into the alley leading to the barrack side entrance. The way lay in shadow beneath high-walled buildings and the faded canopies that hung over sagging balconies. Pale was a dying city. He knew enough of its history to recognize the bleached tints of long-lost glory. True, it had commanded enough power to forge an alliance with Moonspawn, but the captain suspected that that had had more to do with the Moon's Lord's sense of expedience than to any kind of mutual recognition of power. The local gentry made much of finery and pomp, but their props looked tired and worn. He wondered how alike he and his kind were with these droopy citizens. A sound behind him, the faintest scuff, made him turn. A shadow-wrapped figure closed on him. Parron cried out, snatching at his sword. An icy wind washed over him as the figure moved in. The captain backpedaled, seeing the glint of blades in each hand. He twisted to one side, his sword halfway out of the scabbard. His attacker's left hand darted up. Parron jerked his head back, throwing his shoulder forward to block a blade that never arrived. Instead, the long dagger slid like fire into his chest. A second blade sank into his side, even as blood gushed up inside to fill his mouth. Coughing and groaning, Parron reeled, careened off a wall, then slid down with one hand grasping futilely at the damp stones, his fingernails gouging tracks through the mold. A blackness closed around his thoughts, which seemed to involve only a deep, heartfelt regret. Faintly, a ringing sound came to his ears, as if something small and metallic was skittering across a hard surface. The sound remained of something spinning, and the darkness encroached no further.
"Sloppy," a man said in a thin voice. "I am surprised."
The accent was familiar, pulling him to a childhood memory, his father dealing with Dalhoney's traders. The answer came from directly above Parron.
"Keeping an eye on me?"
Another accent he recognized, Canis, and the voice seemed to come from a girl or a child, yet he knew it was the voice of his killer.
"Coincidence,"
the other replied, then giggled.
"Someone, something, I should say, has entered our warren. Uninvited. My hounds hunt."
"I don't believe in coincidences." Again came the giggle.
"Nor do I. 2 years ago, we began a game of our own, a simple settling of old scores. It seems we have stumbled into a wholly different game here in Pale."
"Whose?"
"I shall have that answer soon enough."
"Don't get distracted, Amanas. Lassine remains our target, and the collapse of the empire she rules but never earned."
"I have, as always, supreme confidence in you, Cotillion."
"I must be getting back," the girl said, moving away.
Of course. So this is the man Lorne sent to find you?
I believe so. This should draw her into the fray, in any case.
And this is desirable. The conversation faded as the two speakers walked away, leaving, as the only sound in Parent's head, that whirring hum, as if a coin was spinning, endlessly spinning. Chapter 4. They were of a kind. Then the histories writ large in tattooed tracery, the tales a tracking of old wounds. But something glowed hard in their eyes. Those flame-gnawed arches, that vanishing span, they are their own past, each in turn destined to fall in line on the quiet wayside beside the river they refuse to name. The Bridge Burners. Book 4, Chapter 1. Tok the Younger. Born 1141. Tattersail glared at Whiskey Jack.
"Hairlock is insane," she pronounced. "That edge to him was always there. But he's chewed holes in his own warrens and he's tasting chaos. Worse yet, it's making him more powerful, more dangerous."
They had gathered in Tattersail's quarters, which consisted of an outer room where they now sat, and a bedroom with the rare luxury of a solid wood door. The past occupants had hastily stripped the place of anything valuable and portable, leaving behind only the larger pieces of furniture. Tattersail sat at the table, along with Whiskey Jack, Quick Ben, and Kalam, and the sapper named Fiddler. The air in the room had grown hot, stifling.
"Of course he's insane,"
Quick Ben replied, looking at his sergeant, whose face remained impassive. The wizard hastily added,
"But that's to be expected. Fenner's tail, lady. He's got the body of a puppet. Of course that's twisted him."
"How twisted?" Whiskey Jack asked his wizard. "He's supposed to be watching our backs, isn't he?"
Carlum said,
"Quick's got him under control. Hairlock's backtracking, working through the maze. He'll find out who in the Empire wants us dead."
"The danger," Quick Ben added, rounding on Tattersail, "is he's been detected. He needs to slip through the warrens the unconventional way. The regular paths are all tripwired."
Tattersail mulled over that point, then nodded.
"Taishren would find him, or at least catch wind that someone's sniffing around. But Hairlock's using the power of chaos, the paths that lie between warrens. And that's unhealthy. Not just for him, but for all of us."
"Why all of us?"
Whiskey Jack asked. Quick Ben answered,
"It weakens the warrens, frays the fabric, which in turn allows Hairlock to break into them at will. And out again. But we have no choice. We have to give Hairlock his rope. For now."
The sorceress sighed, massaging her brow.
"Taishren's the one you're looking for. I've already told you." "That's not good enough," Quick Ben cut in. "How many agents is he using? What are the details of his plan? What in Hood's name is the plan? Is all this on Lassine's orders? Or is the High Mage eyeing the throne for himself? We need to know, damn it."
"All right, all right,"
Tattersail said.
"So, Hairlock unravels the whole thing for you. Then what? Do you intend to try to kill Taishren and everyone else involved? Are you counting on my help in that?"
She looked from one face to the next. Each revealed nothing. Anger flared and she rose.
"I know," she said stiffly, "that Taishren probably murdered Acheronis, Nightchill, and Mycadra. He probably knew your tunnels would collapse around you, and he might well have decided that Dujek II was a threat that needed culling. But if you think I'm going to help you without knowing what you're planning, you're mistaken. There's more to all this than you're willing to tell me. If it was just your survival at stake, why don't you just desert? I doubt Dujek would chase you down. Unless, of course, Taishren's suspicions about one arm and the second are grounded in truth. You've plans for a mutiny, proclaiming Dujek emperor and marching off to Genobaris.
She paused, looking from one man to the next.
Has Tayshrin simply anticipated you, thereby fouling up your plans? Am I being pulled into a conspiracy? If I am, then I have to know its eventual goals. I have that right, don't I?
Whiskey Jack grunted, then reached for the jug of wine standing on the table. He refilled everyone's cup. Quick Ben let out a long breath, then rubbed the back of his neck.
Tattersail, he said quietly. We're not going to challenge Tayshrin directly. That would be suicide. No, we'll cut away his support carefully, with precision. Then we arrange his fall from grace, assuming the Empress is not involved. But we need to know more. We need those answers before we can decide our options. You don't have to get any more involved than you already are. In fact, it's safer that way. Harelock wants you to protect his back, failing every other option. Chances are, that won't be necessary.
He looked up and gave her a strained smile.
Leave Tayshrin to me and Kalam.
All very well, but you didn't answer me, Tattersail thought. Tattersail looked at the other black-skinned man, her eyes narrowing.
You were a claw once, weren't you?
Kalam shrugged.
I thought no one could leave, alive.
He shrugged again. The sapper, Fiddler, growled something incomprehensible and rose from his chair. He began pacing, his banded legs carrying him from one wall to the next, like a fox in a pit. No one paid him any further attention. Whiskey Jack handed a cup to Tattersail.
Stay with us in this, sorceress. Quick Ben doesn't usually foul things too badly.
He made a sour face.
I admit, I'm not completely convinced either, but I've learned to trust him. You can take that for whatever it's worth.
Tattersail took a deep draught of wine. She wiped her lips.
Your squad's heading to Jerujistan tonight. Covert, which means I won't be able to communicate with you if the situation turns bad. Tayshrin would detect the usual ways, Quick Ben said. Harelock's our only unbreachable link. You reach us through him, Tattersail.
Whiskey Jack eyed the sorceress.
Back to Harelock. You don't trust him?
No.
The sergeant fell silent, his gaze fixed on the tabletop. His impassive expression fell away, revealing a war of emotions.
He keeps his world bottled up, she thought, but the pressure's building.
She wondered what would happen when everything broke loose inside him. The two Seven Cities men waited, eyes on their sergeant. Only Fiddler continued his preoccupied pacing. The sapper's mismatched uniform still carried the stains of the tunnels. Someone else's blood had splashed thickly on the front of his tunic, as if a friend had died in his arms. Poorly healed blisters showed under the uneven bristle of his cheeks and jaw, and his lank red hair hung haphazardly beneath his leather helmet. A long minute passed, then the sergeant nodded sharply to himself. His hard eyes still fixed on the tabletop, he said,
All right, sorceress, we'll give you this. Quick, Ben, tell her about sorry.
Tattersail's brows rose. She crossed her arms and faced the wizard. Quick Ben looked none too pleased. He shifted uneasily and cast a hopeful glance at Kalam, but the big man looked away.
Whiskey Jack growled, Now, wizard!
Quick Ben met Tattersail's steady gaze with an almost childlike expression. Fear, guilt, and chagrin flitted across his fine features.
You remember her?
She barked a harsh laugh.
Not an easy one to forget. An odd sense about her. Dangerous.
She thought about revealing what she'd learned during her fatted with Taishrin.
Virgin of death.
But something held her back. No, she corrected herself, not just something.
I still don't trust them.
You suspect she's in the service of someone else?
The wizard's face was ashen. He cleared his throat.
She was recruited 2 years ago in Itko Khan, one of the usual sweeps across the Empire's heartland.
Kalam's voice rumbled beside her.
Something ugly happened there at around the same time. It's been buried pretty deep, but the adjunct became involved, and a claw came in her wake and silenced damn near everyone in the city guard who might have talked. I made use of old sources, scrounged up some odd details.
Odd, Quickben said, and revealing, if you know what you're looking for.
Tattersail smiled to herself. These two men had a way of talking in tandem. She turned her attention to the wizard, who continued.
Seems a company of cavalry hit some hard luck. No survivors. As for what they ran into, it had something to do with...
Dogs.
Kalam finished without missing a beat. The sorceress frowned at the assassin.
Put it together,
Quickben said, drawing her attention once again.
Adjunct Lorne is Lassine's personal mage killer. Her arrival on the scene suggests sorcery was involved in the massacre. High sorcery.
The wizard's gaze narrowed on Tattersail, and he waited. She swallowed another mouthful of wine.
The fatted showed me, she thought. Dogs and sorcery.
Into her mind returned the image of the rope as she had seen it in the reading.
High House Shadow, ruled by Shadow Throne and the rope, and in their service.
She spoke.
The Seven Hounds of Shadow.
She looked to Whiskey Jack, but the sergeant's eyes remained downcast, his expression blank as stone.
Good,
Quickben snapped, somewhat impatiently.
The hounds hunted. That's our guess, but it's a good one. The 19th Regiment of the 8th Cavalry were all killed, even their horses. A league's worth of coastline settlements needed repopulating. Fine,
Tattersail sighed.
But what does this have to do with sorry?
The wizard turned away, and Kalam spoke.
Herlock's going to follow more than just one trail, sorceress. We're pretty sure Surrey is somehow involved with House Shadow.
It certainly seems, Tassel said, that since its arrival in the deck and the opening of its warren, Shadow's path crosses the Empire's far too often to be accidental. Why should the warren between light and dark display such obsession with the Malazan Empire?
Kalam's gaze was veiled.
Odd, isn't it? After all, the warren only appeared following the Emperor's assassination at Lassine's hand. Shadow Throne and his companion, the patron of assassins, Cotillion, were unheard of before Kellenved and Dancer's deaths. It also seems that whatever disagreement there is between House Shadow and Empress Lassine is, personal.
Tattersail closed her eyes.
Damn it! It's that obvious, isn't it?
She thought.
Quickben, she said. Hasn't there always been an accessible Warren of Shadow? Mianus, the Warren of Illusions? Mianus is a false Warren, sorceress. A shadow of what it claims to represent, if you'll excuse my wording. It is itself an illusion. The gods alone know where it came from, or who created it in the first place, or even why. But the true Warren of Shadow has been closed, inaccessible for millennia, until the 1154th year of Burn's Sleep, 9 years ago. The earliest writings of House Shadow seem to indicate that its throne was occupied by a Tista Idur.
Tista Idur? Tattersail interrupted.
Who were they?
The wizard shrugged.
cousins of the Tista Ani? I don't know, sorceress.
You don't know, she thought. Actually, it seems you know a whole lot.
Quick Ben shrugged to punctuate his last words, then he added,
In any case, we believe Sorry is connected with House Shadow.
Whiskey Jack startled everyone by surging to his feet.
I'm not convinced, he said,
throwing Quick Ben a glare that told Tattersall there had been countless arguments over this issue.
Sorry likes killing, and having her around is like having spiders down your shirt. I know all that. I can see it and feel it the same as any of you. It doesn't mean she's some kind of demon.
He turned to face Kalam.
She kills like you do, Kalam. You've both got ice in your veins. So what? I look at you, and I see a man because that's what men are capable of. I don't hunt for excuses, because I don't like to think that that's how nasty we can get. We look at Sorry, and we see reflections of ourselves. Who'd take it if we don't like what we see?
He sat down just as abruptly as he had risen and reached for the wine jug. When he continued, his voice had dropped a notch.
That is my opinion, anyway. I'm no expert on demons, but I've seen enough mortal men and women act like demons, given the need. My squad's wizard is scared witless by a 15-year-old girl. My assassin slips a knife into his palm whenever she's within 20 paces of him.
He met Tattersall's eyes.
So, Hairlock has two missions instead of one. And if you think Quick Ben and Kalam are correct in their suspicions, you can walk from all this. I know how things go when gods step into the fray.
The lines around his eyes tightened momentarily, a replaying of memories.
I know, he whispered.
Tattersall slowly let out her breath, which she had been holding since the sergeant first rose to his feet. His needs were clear to her now. He wanted Sorry to be just human, just a girl twisted hard by a hard world. Because that was something he understood, something he could deal with.
Back in Seven Cities, she said quietly, the story goes that the Emperor's first sword, his commander of his armies, Dasam Ultor, had accepted a god's offer. Hood made Dasam his knight of death. Then something happened. Something went wrong. And Dasam renounced the title, swore a vow of vengeance against Hood, against the Lord of Death himself. All at once, other ascendants started meddling, manipulating events. It all culminated with Dasam's murder, then the Emperor's assassination, and blood in the streets, temples at war, sorceries unleashed.
She paused, seeing the memories of those times reflected in Whiskey Jack's face.
You were there.
And you don't want it to happen again, she thought, here and now.
You think if you can deny that Sorry serves Shadow, your conviction will be enough to shape reality. You need to believe that, to save your sanity. Because there are some things in life that you can go through only once. Oh, Whiskey Jack, I can't ease your burden. You see, I think Quick Ben and Kalam are right.
She spoke.
If Shadow has claimed the girl, the trail will be evident. Hairlock will find it.
Do you walk away from this?
The sergeant asked.
Tattersall smiled.
The only death I fear is dying ignorant. No. Is my answer. Brave words, woman, she thought. These people have a way of bringing out the best, or maybe the worst in me.
Something glittered in Whiskey Jack's eyes, and he nodded.
So that's that, he said gruffly.
He leaned back.
What's on your mind, fiddler?
He asked the sapper, who was still pacing behind him.
Got a bad feeling, the man muttered. Something's wrong. Not here, though, but close by. It's just...
He stopped, cocking his head, then he sighed, resuming his uneasy walk.
Not sure, not sure.
Tattersall's eyes followed the wiry little man.
A natural talent. Something working on pure instinct. Very rare. I think you should listen to him.